This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
So much money for a bunch of grown men to have a place to play games. It's the first story we're talking about on Today in Ohio, the news podcast discussion from Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer. It's an abbreviated version today, so we'll be done probably in about two-thirds normal time. I'm Chris Quinn here with Lisa Garvin and Laura Johnston. Let's get to it. Laura, this makes you wonder whether Dee and Jimmy Haslam have taken the time to understand the state they now live in. How do they really expect the public to come up with a staggering $1.2 billion to help build a $2.4 billion stadium for their team to play with footballs in? What in our state and local history makes them think that this is even remotely possible, which it is not?
I have no idea. They're not explaining their rationale. They're not talking at all. What they're doing is presenting plans and renderings to lawmakers and to, I don't know who else around the state, anyone they think that could help them in this endeavor. But we are only getting this because of others who have seen the presentation, and it took quite a bit of reporting to get that. So we don't have these renderings, we can't show them to you because they're not public, because the Haslams aren't being public about it. There's no plan agreed upon, but the Haslams want the public to pay for half, regardless of what they go with. Either this $2.4 billion dome in Brook Park, which is apparently would be buried in the ground a bit so that it wouldn't be such a problem for Hopkins Airport, or $500 million to update the existing stadium on the lake. I don't know if this is like when you're house shopping and you see a really expensive house and then all of a sudden the other one doesn't seem so expensive. Like, it's the whole thing to make us go, okay.
No, that's not what it is. $500
million doesn't sound so bad, but it's a lot of money either way. And the Haslams have said that they think the money would be repaid over time from the economic activity and fiscal benefits from a new stadium and entertainment district. But
which is preposterous, right?
That doesn't work. Like, mm-hmm. Sean McDonald did a deep dive and they're not going to make enough money to pay this back.
But back up, reasonable time frame. You're talking about the local money. They're presuming they would get the sin taxes there, which is a big presumption because the city of Cleveland could vote that down and then they don't get it. And that would be probably two-thirds of that money or a little less. The rest of it, they think, would come from this entertainment district, which, let's face it, there's not more entertainment that people pay for in Cuyahoga County. This would rob from somewhere else. So an existing district would suffer. Mm-hmm. But they want $600 million from the state. That the state's never done anything close to that. And look, how do you begin to justify that in a county that is hurting like our county is, in a region that has one of the worst airports in the country, and with all the other needs, $1.2 billion in public money for a football stadium where they play 10 games a year? There is just zero justification for this. And I think now that the number's out there, the public's going to speak up. I put it up out of my text messaging thing today. I'm betting that that has a huge response, and I'm betting that it's overwhelmingly no way do we want to spend tax money on something like this. On the lakefront, they have it in their head that they deserve a 50-50 split. The city's not giving them 50-50. The city's giving them, it sounds like, maybe 35%, maybe 40%. It sounds like they're fighting over about 100 to 150 million, but that's all they're getting. In this case, they're saying they want a 50-50 split on a $2.4 billion project. There's just no way. This is ridiculous. I wonder whether they regret what they did in Cleveland. Then instead of asking for 50-50, they should have asked that the city pay for 70% and then negotiate the 50. And what they're doing here is making such a preposterous ask that they're planning to back it off. Because there's no way. The state's not giving them $600 million. And it's a pipe dream to think that locally we can do it. And even if you had that money available, that this is the other question. If you had $1.2 billion in public money available, is this how you would spend it? Cleveland schools are broke, right? They're going to have to ask for a tax increase because they're broke. Like I said, our airport is a disaster. If you built a gleaming airport with a real funding structure and reduced the landing fees, what could that do for economic development? And everybody uses it every day of the year. This one boggles the mind.
Well, and we already did the story, right, where it's like, if you had $350 million, what could you do for the parks in Cleveland? What recreational spaces could you improve? And we did that story. If you had $1.2 billion to throw around, you're right. We could do all of these things. We could build a new jail. We could build a new courthouse. We could do all of the things that we know we need to do and we don't know how to pay for. And instead of, you know, bulking up a billionaire, we could do something for the good of people. I mean, think about what you could do to eradicate poverty with $1.2 billion.
This is an outrageous, outrageous act. They got a big pair of cojones if they think that this is going to go over. I mean, honestly, that's arrogance to say, oh yeah, pay for half.
It's beyond arrogance. It's preposterous. Look, we keep talking about how the county's broke and it's got to build a new jail and the courthouse needs either a gigantic renovation or a replacement. Together, those two won't cost as much as this stadium, where it's for games. It's just for some people to play
for
games.
For a privately owned team.
If the government's paying for half of it, I'm not sure it'd be privately owned.
The team's
privately owned. But we would probably be stuck with the maintenance of that thing, which, let's remember, the day it opens, the maintenance costs start going up. And we've seen that with the arena. Look, I've said this before. If they were serious about changing the way we go about this, they should go to the legislature and say, look, the people that use our stadium come from 12 counties. We got the numbers. They come from X number of counties. And we have an airport that's falling apart. Can we create a multi-county commission in Northeast Ohio to develop facilities and maybe create a quarter-cent sales tax across a broad area to pay for it all and lay in future funding for renovations and new stadiums until the end of time? There is a precedent for this. This is how we pay for RTA. There's a quarter cent sales tax in Cuyahoga County that pays for like 90% of RTA's budget, transportation. You could do the same thing, finally fix the decrepit, falling apart airport and have a stadium situation where poverty-stricken taxpayers aren't being hit up for the money for the rest of the time, and everybody who uses these facilities would be on the hook to pay for them. Instead, they do this.
It has to be that bigger county area because there's only 1.3 million people in Cuyahoga County. And you're right, the Browns have a huge following for like half the state, basically. You could probably argue it's bigger than 12 counties. And they should have to pay for this infrastructure because you're right. If the taxpayers pay for it, then the taxpayers are on the hook for it. And we've seen over and over again at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, at Progressive Field, those are not cheap renovations. You know, they have cushy new seats at the ballpark this year. They're lovely, but those are coming from tax dollars. You know, is that what you wanted your money to go to?
No, not, and $1.2 billion of public money. Like, it gets back to my question. Have they really taken the time to understand where they live now? Because this is not what this community will get behind. It's obscene what they're asking for. You know, and the other thing, Laura, you mentioned that they're not being public about it. It's kind of underhanded what they're doing. They're walking around showing it to all these people off the record. And actually, I've heard from other media, they're bringing in the media one at a time to say, look at our bright shiny, look what we can do. I believe we're going to be on the hook for one of those. And instead of just going, hey, public, here's what we're proposing, putting it out there in full force, saying this is what we're proposing, instead it's this this whisper campaign. What is that when you're asking for $1.2 billion from the public?
Right.
Oh, and, well, and beyond that, they want it built by 2029. So the clock is ticking here.
I think it's crazy that they're showing all these people these renderings and people are like, oh, they look really nice. That's because they're renderings. All renderings look amazing, right? They're not real. They're just what somebody drew. You have no idea if it could ever be built like that. I'm surprised actually they're not putting that out, because I think when people heard Brook Park, when Browns fans heard about a dome, they were like, oh, this would be really great. We'll get it off the lakefront. We'll be more comfortable during games. But they're not thinking about who's going to pay for it.
And we can't afford it. I mean, right. We just can't afford it. And again, this will not create new entertainment opportunities.
No.
It will
hurt. Or no economic development at all.
It'll hurt Crocker Park, or it'll hurt somebody. Somebody's going to pay that price. And the public paid for that stuff, too. We've provided tax benefits to everybody that's developed commercial properties. So the public, which funded that stuff, will get hurt by it because it just moves it around. It's just like Pinecrest hurt the stuff in Beechwood. And right. It's just, we're moving the pieces of the puzzle around with nothing new.
And you know, you said, do they know where they live? And this is more expensive than anything that people are asking for, you know, all across the country in these stadiums. But except for, I guess, in Nashville, which, you know, Tennessee is where they're from, the Nashville approved $1.26 billion to cover 60% of a new Tennessee Titans stadium. So I guess they're looking at that. But Nashville is not Cleveland.
No. At $1.2 billion in public money, that is the biggest jaw dropper I would have ever expected. You're listening to Today in Ohio. Lisa, we could have some huge changes coming to classrooms throughout Ohio with one of the most dramatic proposals in education requirements we've ever seen. What is proposed and why? And why would we reduce the educational requirements for school principals?
This is Senate Bill 168, which is being sponsored by Republican Columbus Representative Senator Michelle Reynolds. It's among more than a dozen changes that including changing the licensure requirement from a master's to a bachelor's degree for principals, administrators, and superintendents. They say, proponents of the bill say, it would allow educators to focus on teaching instead of spending years and money on seeking a master's degree, and will increase the likelihood of them staying in their profession longer. Not sure of the logic on that. And also to address ongoing teacher shortages. Ohio Association of Colleges for Teacher Education President Mary Heather Munger says admins require additional knowledge not offered at the bachelor level, things like school safety, finances, legal issues, and leadership. The Ohio Educational Association lobbyist Matt Dobson says there are other ways to address shortages without lowering standards. Senate Bill 168 also removes the seniority requirement when considering layoffs of bus drivers, secretaries, and other non-teaching staff, and it no longer requires teachers to get supplemental contracts when teaching 4-credit classes outside of school hours.
I've seen this before. I think it was in Florida. They had a teaching shortage, and so they were allowing people with subject area expertise to teach. I think they still had to get a teaching certificate in their off time, but they could join teaching staffs. I think it was in high schools. I don't think you could do it with elementary education because you really need to know what you're doing there. And so I guess there's a precedent for this because other states have done it. Is our teaching shortage so bad, though, that we need to do this?
Apparently so. And as you know, as college campuses close, I would think there would be a lot of, you know, administrators and principals and others looking for new jobs. Bride Rose Sweeney, the Democrat from Westlake in the House, she says it's pretty astonishing to make a law that would require teachers to work more without additional pay. Now, there are supporters of this bill, the Ohio School Boards Association and the Buckeye Association of School Administrators and the Ohio Association of School Business Officials all support it. They say it will reduce burdensome regulations and put decision-making back into local hands.
I don't know. Is it burdensome, though, to require teachers to have continuing education? My wife's a teacher, and as part of the rules for getting certified, she had a continue her education through the years. She ended up getting the master's degree and the extra credits. But you're learning stuff that helps teach the kids and keep your focus on what is effective. And to take that away, we're saying, okay, once a teacher, you're good to go, and we don't need to make sure you're staying abreast of what's up.
Yeah, it's a little bit distressing. And as they said, you know, the bachelor's level doesn't teach administrative skills. So are they going to pick it up on the job?
I don't know. I got to say, one of the two best teachers I had all through high school was a geometry teacher who had spent his career working in an armory and in retirement decided to go and be a teacher. And it was one of the best classes I ever took. So I guess subject area experts that can make things understandable would be a benefit, and they will require people to take tests to show that they understand it. But it you know, it's like we're storytellers in our business, right? So there are people that know how to write, but they don't know how to tell stories. There are people that know the subject matter, but do they know how to teach it and make it understandable? That's the trick. You're listening to Today in Ohio. Is former politician Josh Mandel headed to jail because of his behavior in his divorce case, of all things? Laura, what did he do that has so annoyed the magistrate in his case?
This sounds like a reality show, and I feel so sorry for the kids involved in this. But an Ashland County magistrate ordered Mandel and his ex-wife, Ilana Mandel, to spend 7 days in jail for different violations of previous court orders connected to this divorce case. One is that they were entering each other's homes without permission, refusing to pay bills related to their three kids, improperly failing to take a kid to sports practice. I mean, these are things that have been written down. They have video of some of this stuff. And it's been going back and forth and getting more and more acrimonious. The order says the jail sentence won't be carried out as long as each fulfills their certain conditions. For example, Josh Mandel has to provide his ex-wife with regular updates about a 529 college savings account for their kids. And Ilana Mandel agreed to pay these fees for a kid's enrollment in a sports program, minus the fees that Josh Mandel owes her to cover medical expenses. You would think that for the good of your kids, you would be able to work this out and not have this be in a court file somewhere. I mean, they filed in Ashland to try to keep it out of the news, and this is what they're doing.
It's so petty and it's so childish, but how many times have we covered divorce cases where people behave in ways that doesn't make sense? I think so much raw emotion is involved in divorces that people do things that when they look back later, they really regret. In this case, it's so bad that the magistrate is done with them. And if they cross the line again, they're going to get locked up.
Well, and we don't write about divorce cases very often. Like, it is a private matter, but when you are a public persona and it's this bad, then yeah, it's in the news. And what's interesting is that it's getting worse, right? Usually you would think that in a divorce case, it's really hot at the beginning because there are so many emotions. And as time has passed, maybe things begin to heal a little bit better and you put aside your differences for the good of your family. And again, these poor kids, that just sounds awful.
Well, let's remember too, he slunk off to a distant county to file this divorce and got it sealed because he's the family values Senate candidate who was getting divorced. So instead of being public and transparent, he tried to hide all this. And it just turns out that the magistrate in the county where they filed it is not his friend. So it's kind of an irony.
Yeah.
There.
Josh Mandel, former state treasurer, multiple time Senate candidate. And his wife is one of the most prominent and wealthiest families in Cleveland.
Yeah. You're listening to Today in Ohio. Why is Cleveland dropping in national rankings of cities for energy efficiency and using cleaner fuels? And how do we compare to other Ohio cities, Lisa?
The American Council for Energy Efficient Economy has a report that ranked Cleveland number 46 of 75 major cities in moving toward energy efficiency and cleaner grid and cleaner fuels. That's down 8 spots from the previous year. Columbus came in at 32, Cincinnati at 49, Toledo at 72, and Akron was dead last at 75. The top cities in this report were San Francisco, Denver, and Seattle. So the concerns that they had were that, you know, Cleveland's transportation policies aren't exactly energy efficient. There's no requirement for electrical vehicle charging stations and new developments in the area, and subsidized access to efficient transportation for disadvantaged people. That's not there. And the updated zoning code should be updated to promote energy efficient transportation. So we did do well in some areas. We did well in sustainable municipal building policies, including new municipal construction or major renovations to municipal buildings achieve the LEED silver standard, efficiency levels 30% beyond the minimum required. And the city is also on track to reduce greenhouse gas emissions 40% below 2010 levels by 2030.
I get the feeling that it's not so much that we're going backwards, but that other cities are moving ahead faster than we are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so it's not the worst thing, but we should be able to do more is what it sounds like. And compared to the rest of the Ohio cities, we're doing pretty well. You're listening to Today in Ohio. The folks running the juvenile court have not treated the guards in the detention center very well, and now taxpayers have to own the consequences. Laura, how much is this episode costing us? Not $1.2 billion, I hope.
Not quite. And right, we're not in the same ballpark at all, but we are talking about overtime. And you think if you just paid people the OT they were owed, we wouldn't be in this pickle. But Cuyahoga County Council on Tuesday approved $300,000 for the juvenile court case that involves the detention center and $150,000 in a jail lawsuit. In both cases, the county did not properly pay employees for time spent working more than 40 hours in 1 week. Spokespeople told Adam Faris that the accusations are no longer an issue and haven't been for some time, but they didn't clarify what policies had changed, if any. The juvenile detention center employees, which included custodial workers, detention officers, and others, filed the lawsuit in federal court in 2019. They said the county didn't keep accurate records of time worked and didn't pay time and a half for working more than 40 hours.
Yeah, and then we had a big shortage of guards over there. I wonder why. I hope they fixed it, but it's sad that the taxpayers repeatedly have to foot the bill for egregious behavior, both at the jail and at the detention center.
Right, because even if it's $450,000, that doesn't include all of the time their lawyers spent. Who knows if they hired extra lawyers for this? It's just like, just do the right thing. Also, have your guards act in the right way so we can stop paying out lawsuits.
All right, you're listening to Today in Ohio. Ralph Nader made his name by writing a book that was partly about it called Unsafe at Any Speed. So, Lisa, why is a Cleveland museum doing a big exhibition on the Chevy Corvair?
Because it is a classic car. It didn't last very long. And I actually saw one the other day. A guy was driving a really nice restored convertible Corvair, probably mid-60s. And I had to honk at him because I love classic cars. But the Crawford Auto Museum is having an exhibition celebrating the 64th anniversary of the Chevy Corvair called Corvair, the American Porsche. 7 different models will be on display through September 20th. The 1967 model had what they call a pancake 6 engine, so they were flat, valves in opposition with each other. 95 horsepower at 3,600 RPMs, 2 single barrel carbs and hydraulic lifters. I mean, this car was a muscle car. It really was. They're also going to have a Corvair cruise in from 4 to 8 p.m. on Thursday, June 27th in connection with the exhibition. Now, the Corvairs were manufactured from 1960 to 69. It actually won Motor Trend Car of the Year in 1960, its first model year. 1.8 million of them were made. It was the first and only flat 6 air-cooled engine and transmission in an American-made car, and it was done 3 years before Porsche did it with their 911 model. But as you said, the Corvair was the subject of a Ralph Nader book, Unsafe at Any Speed. They said it was dangerous for handling, steering, and rollover issues. But a later report done by Texas A&M University in 1972 for the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration found that there was really no greater potential in the Corvair for loss of control than any other car. But they eventually phased out the Corvair, this is sad, for the Chevrolet Vega.
Yeah, it was kind of amazing how Nader really made a name for himself on this, but then later it came out that this wasn't nearly as bad as he made it seem to be. And there were people who loved that car, so I'm not surprised to hear that you're charmed when you see one.
Oh, yeah. And I didn't realize this. The first generation of Corvairs from 60 to 65, they actually built, they had the two-door coupe, you know, the convertible, they had the four-door, but they also had a pickup model and a van model. And I've actually seen a Corvair pickup. It's been a long time. Wow. They're pretty rare. And then from then on, they were just doing the two-door coupe and the four-door.
So they went with the Vega and Ford was bringing out the Mustang. So we know who won that battle. You're listening to Today in Ohio. Like I said, it's a shorter episode. Thank you for listening. Thanks, Lisa. Thanks, Laura. Come back Thursday. We'll be talking about the news.